Blog Talk Radio.
Tornado.
Tornado, Tony Pennycow.
And we have another edition of the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show tonight. We have a guest in the second hour, Glenn House. He is Dr. House, so to speak, I guess. Not the Dr. House from the show, of course. As far as I know, anyway, it might be one of those things where it's based on his character. But Dr. House is a medical director of Penrose Hospital's Center for Neuro and Trauma Rehabilitation. He basically is going to chat with us about combat sports-related injuries and specifically neurological injuries from concussions and pugilistic dementia, that sort of thing, since we occasionally bring that up anyway on the show. Figured that would be a good guest for us.
Yeah, I was actually reading a little bit of his background when you sent me the email yesterday, and I think it's actually an excellent guest for us. I have a lot of questions I'm looking forward to asking him tonight. I was looking briefly at his background yesterday when you sent me the email. Unfortunately, I was at work at the time, so I didn't have a whole lot of time to look at it. It looks like it says on there that he's an L7, I believe, quadriplegic from a skiing accident.
C7, but yes. Yeah, he used to be an extreme skier and obviously had a bad accident, broke his spine and became a quadriplegic as a result. And it kind of reminded me of the story of the guy on Fox News there, Charles Krauthammer, who jumped into a pool when he was in his 20s and broke his neck, and he's in a wheelchair too. But when they put him on the show, you can't even tell he's in a wheelchair. They have his all the stuff that he needs to breathe and function is like all under his shirt, and he has his, you see from time to time, he takes a really deep breath, and you can see like the neck area kind of really expands a lot, but other than that, you really can't tell. Actually, I heard a story once about him that Sean Hannity came up to him at a rally and had no idea. He's like a Fox guy who's always on the panel. Every day there's like a segment, they have a panel, and he's always on it. So I guess Hannity had only seen him on TV. He hadn't actually seen the taping of the show or anything where he's there. So he comes up to him at a rally, and he sees him in the wheelchair, and he's like, what happened? He had no idea. Dr. House is in the same situation. He's obviously a very very intelligent guy, went through medical school and all that, and he's a medical expert who has a medical condition. So We'll have to ask him what that's like and how that's been to experience and overcome over the years since the accident happened.
Yeah, and I know another interesting thing will be to ask him if any of the people that he talks to or shares his experiences with, whether they're a patient or whether other people in training, whether they're reds or fellows in the medical profession, if they view him in any different way. I mean, whether it's in a positive or negative light. That'll be an interesting thing to ask him. Also, I'd like to talk to him. You know, obviously, we're going to talk a lot about combat sports, boxing, mixed martial arts, any type of other type of martial art, even if it's not in, quote-unquote, an octagon, like just martial arts tournaments and stuff, judo tournaments, things like that. But then also, I'm going to get into other sports. I'm going to get into sports like football, obviously. We've seen a number of times that a person's been carried out on a backboard with a neck immobilizer. Some of them have been lucky to, like Adam Talaferro from Penn State back about 10 years ago, who was lucky to not be paralyzed. And you have other guys like Mike Utley, to name one from the Detroit Lions from back in the day, and many others. That Dennis Byrd, I believe it was. I think he was one of the lucky ones, if I'm not mistaken. But other guys that have been rendered, paralyzed in a wheelchair for the rest of their life from playing football. Also, we're going to talk about concussion injuries. There was a member of the Philadelphia Eagles from back in the early 90s when I really started getting into, football. And he was one of their famed, players on their, number one ranked defense, went by the name of Andre Waters. And he was, a known fearless hitter and knock guys out of the middle, going over the middle. And a couple of years ago, he committed suicide with a gunshot to the head. And when they did an autopsy on his brain, they said he had the brain of like an 80-some-year-old dementia patient. And that was from all his football. Another, obviously, story is in the world of professional wrestling. We have the Chris Benoit story from a couple of years ago. We also have, instances where other professional wrestlers have had concussion, situations. Wrestlers like Stone Cold Steve Austin that broke their neck in the ring or condensed their vertebrae. What?
What were you saying?
Well, when did I cut off? Who was I talking to? Football or wrestling?
Right after you said something about Steve Austin's neck.
Stone Cold Steve Austin, back in 1997, they did a pile driver move and he condensed his vertebrae. And he ended up eventually having major neck surgery. And he was actually partially paralyzed in the ring for a few minutes. We had other guys that have ruptured discs in their necks doing suplexes had major fusion surgery. But then also, like, guys like Chris Benoit from doing moves like diving headbutts and stuff had so many concussions. They said his brain resembled, like, a person with Alzheimer's disease.
Right. Yeah, I actually wrote an article, too, about the helmet-to-helmet hits last year that they were cracking down on in the NFL. And
I'll tell you what was funny, Rich, and I'm going back, about 20 years now. I was, a sophomore in high school. Because my first year in my high school, you played on the freshman football team. You went up against other freshmen. Starting with the sophomore year, it was sophomores, juniors, and seniors were on the, practicing all with the varsity. Then you'd have your varsity squad, you'd have your junior varsity squad. And I think it was the second game of the season. I was a defensive lineman. And just by chance, the ball snapped, and I was lining up against a very taller offensive lineman. And I kind of hit him in the chest with my head. And I felt like I compressed my neck a little bit. And I was just woozy from it. But I didn't come out, and I didn't even sit down. I went back in the huddle, and I don't remember the next play or two. And then it went off on the field, and it was halftime, and then I felt okay. And then it was like the next day I was forgetting things. Like I left my jersey in the locker room and someone like took my jersey. I had to get a new one. I was like on my way home. I was like forgetting stuff in my classes. And I was like talking to my dad. My dad's like, I don't want you practicing, you know, at least until you talk to the coaches and you see a trainer. So the coaches and trainer are like, all right, you should sit out for the day. I sat out for one day, and all the varsity players are like making fun of me, like, oh, you're a pussy, you know, you're a quitter, you know, just busted my stones because I was sitting out for a day. What do you think, you got a concussion or something? And I was like, I don't know. I remember I had my bell wrong, and it didn't affect me much during the game as much, but it affected me like the next day. And now, if that happened now, they would have been sitting me down for like 2 weeks, especially as a 15-year-old high school kid.
Right. Yeah, I played a little football myself in middle school and high school my freshman year, but I gave it up for wrestling and cross country after that. But I had my fair share of hard hits and just one of those things, you know, you got to watch out for it. And my perspective in the article that I wrote was that, you know, some of the rules that they changed were really kind of putting the whole sport in a position where it was moving away from, you know, the excitement that you get in a typical football game, because people were being so cautious because they were trying so hard to avoid those inevitable hits. You know, you're going to have those hits every now and then, but to turn around.
A lot of guys are overly cautious not to get a penalty now, too.
Right,
Starting with 10, you're trying to get the ball back, you know, the chance to score, potentially win the game, and the guy throws a pass over the middle, and, you know, the guy's going to catch it. Now, if you slam into him, hoping to jar the ball for you so they can punt and you get the ball back, or are you afraid to hit him so much that, you know, then you might get a penalty, and they definitely get the first down.
Yeah, and the whole thing is, too, not only the penalties, but the fines that these guys were getting.
Yeah, right.
And then how do you determine whether that's a malicious hit or not? It's a very fine line. And, you know, obviously you care about the safety of the players. You want to make sure that nobody gets seriously hurt. But at the same time, I thought the way that they were implementing these rules was really detrimental to the game itself, because it can't affect certain things that happen in the game by making these rules. It's going to happen, you know, whether it's by accident or on purpose. You know, how do you tell? So that was my criticism, but I can understand the need for safety. It's just it needs to be implemented a little bit better. But as far as MMA and boxing go, and those type of injuries, I know I've actually the last time I spoke, about a year ago at least now, I had a little bit of a residual effect a few days after the fact, but it didn't feel like I was at all negatively affected. It was just like, you know, you had that sense of you know, there's something going on up there, but it didn't seem like I could tell there was any adverse effects from it. I could just feel something up there. It was kind of fuzzy. But it was just kind of a feeling, and there was no neurological symptoms like I was forgetting, like you were, nothing like that. But I know just from that experience and from you know, boxing in college, that every now and then it definitely does affect the brain. You get some issues going on up there. But in MMA, the beef has been with these concussions. You know, we've talked about time and time again that the differences between boxing and MMA require that, or not require, but are such that in boxing you're more likely to hit the guy in the head than in MMA. In an MMA, it's elbows, knees, and kicks that typically open up holes in people's heads and cause concussions, rather than the sustained punching to the head that you see in boxing more often. But, you know, like we say all the time, the jury is still out on MMA. We just talked last week about a study that's being done that Dana White was surprisingly in support of, with head injuries and that sort of thing. So we'll have to see how that comes out. But Dr. House will be coming on at 9:15 Eastern. Until then, we'll be chatting about all the week's combat sports news. You can call in and suggest anything that you want us to talk about or just shoot the breeze with us. The number is 347-324-3228 if you'd like to do that. So check us out and give us a ring if you feel like chatting. We have a couple interesting stories here I wanted to talk about. Alistair Overeem, I think I brought up last week. He's been talking about going over to boxing. He's been having a little bit of difficulty with the Strikeforce/UFC negotiations there because he pulled out of the heavyweight Grand Prix tournament. They wanted him to fight in September. He wanted to fight in October. So now it appears that he's going to be fighting over in Moscow in October. And he's going to be fighting on a circuit called Golden Glory in the kickboxing MMA Glory World Series. And he doesn't have an opponent yet. But it sounds like basically trying to put the fire under the ass of the Zaffa organization there to sign him to an exclusive contract of some sort. And it looks like the way that his contract was arranged, it was going to expire after the heavyweight Grand Prix, and he would have had to renegotiate after that. So now that he's out of the Grand Prix, I guess they're just saying that, or he's just thinking that he's free to fight wherever he wants. And I know that the unique thing about Strikeforce that the UFC doesn't seem to have been able to change or doesn't want to change is that their fighters aren't under those exclusive terms that UFC fighters are under where they can't fight anywhere else while under contract with Strikeforce. So it may just be he's still under contract with Strikeforce, but they're allowing him to fight elsewhere because there's no restriction in his contract. That's one of the interesting stories we've run across this week. A really interesting story here about a one-armed boxer, or a one-handed boxer, I should say. It's a one-handed man took on the Transportation Safety Administration recently, and he was actually a prestigious, he was actually an amateur boxer, and surprised the crowd with his right hooks, according to a Queens newspaper in 2002. And he still boxes, still trains, and everything like that. But the Transportation Security Administration, not safety, sorry, said that he didn't qualify for a position there because of his disability. So he can get in the ring and trade punches with people. 32-year-old guy, but he can't work as a transportation security officer. Part of his job, I guess, would have been to pat down passengers and check luggage. But he says nobody ever tested him for those tasks, so he's suing them. And he's basically he trains with heavyweight fighters, and he's physically fit, obviously, but apparently not fit enough to molest people in line to get on the airplane. So, but basically the law requires that screeners possess basic aptitudes and physical abilities, including color perception, visual and oral acuity, physical coordination, and motor skills, which doesn't seem to have anything to do with not having a hand. But that's their position is that's their prerogative. They say that they have the right, despite the Americans with Disability Acts, because they're a government agency, they can get around that. But he's suing. Originally, he didn't want to sue because he thought, hey, it's the government. But now he says he can do it. They made a huge mistake, and we'll see. See what happens there. Interesting legal case there. I know there's that old saying about a one-legged guy in an ass-kicking contest. But I don't know about a one-handed guy in a legal contest. A little bit of mixed martial arts boxing crossover news here. We got BJ Penn making a little news because he's training with a famed boxing coach named Jason Perillo for his UFC 137 fight. Perillo was 8-0 with 6 knockouts as a professional boxer before he started his coaching career. And basically, BJ Penn is taking the hint we've dropped time and time again here on the show that the MMA fighters are weak in their boxing. They need to work on it. But basically, Penn is working with this guy. He actually worked with him before, but now he's spending a little bit more time with him to train for his next fight. And of course, we have the big Friday night fights tomorrow night at the Cosmopolitan that I'll be attending here in Vegas. And boy, did I blow it yesterday. I didn't go to the press conference. And guess who shows up at the press conference? None other than Mike Tyson. Shows up, surprises everybody. I could have definitely come up to him, given him a business card, and tried to get him on the show if I was there. But I figured, oh, it's just a press conference. Nobody huge is going to be there. And I missed my shot. But hopefully he'll be at the actual show. You know, if he shows up at the press conference, typically that means he's going to be at the show itself. And having press passes, I'll probably be able to approach him.
That'd be awesome.
Although, you know, with his history with Teddy Atlas, he might not be there. At least he won't be close to the broadcast booth anyway. But I would imagine that they've been at events together before without issue. But anyway, Mike Tyson was at the press conference. He was mugging for photos with all the fighters, and we put a blog out yesterday on it. So if you want to check out him schmoozing with all the boxers there, check that out. I would definitely get a picture with him if I was there yesterday, too. So kind of bummed out about that. What can you do? We'll see if we can corner him tomorrow night. Not literally corner him. I don't want to get into that territory. In wrestling, we have some professional wrestling news. An Ottawa wrestler filed a $6.5 million lawsuit against Abdullah the Butcher, Devin Hannibal Nicholson. He took his feud from the ring and the media into the courtroom. This past Monday, Nicholson filed a suit against Larry Shreve, who is Abdullah the Butcher's real name. In the Ontario Superior Court of Justice, and he's charging negligence and assault and battery, seeking $6.5 million in damages. Under Ontario's Family Law Act, co-plaintiffs include Laura Joan Nicholson, Arthur Gwynn Nicholson, Frederick Carey Nicholson, and Joan Greenwell, each claiming $40,000 for general damages. And it's actually stemming from a 2007 bout in Ottawa, Ontario, where Nicholson alleges that Shreve cut him with a razor blade without his permission. Nicholson alleges that Shreve's blood mixed with his own and gave him hepatitis C. And he learned of his infection in mid-2009. In September 2009, World Wrestling Entertainment pulled a 3-year contract offer to Nicholson, allegedly on the basis of his disease. And over the past couple of years, he's been collecting thoughts from wrestlers about the use of blood in matches, for a documentary entitled Don't Bleed on Me. originally from Windsor, Ontario, Shreve carved out a legendary career as Abdullah the Butcher, a maniacal wrestler bent on destruction and drawing blood from his opponents. He lives in Atlanta, Georgia, and runs a restaurant now. According to Nixon...
Abdullah the Butcher's House of Ribs or something.
According to Nicholson, his lawyer met with Shreve in September 2010 in Atlanta, and Shreve agreed to provide his blood work, yet the suit alleges that he never provided the promised sample or result. And on July 17th, Shreve posted a note on his Facebook page, "I received my medical reports. I have no hepatitis or AIDS or anything. My blood tests are all negatives, and these fools will be prosecuted in justice." So that's an interesting case. I doubt if those tests are really negative that this Nicholson guy is going to get far with this lawsuit. Another story from the media here. Jesse Godders, a.k.a. Mr. Pectacular, just signed a deal with TNA Wrestling. And this is... kind of a big deal, I guess, because he's a former Big Brother star. So he's one of those reality TV stars who pulled off a nice move to get a professional wrestling deal. Jesse signed a developmental contract with TNA Impact Wrestling that runs through the rest of 2011. He's been training with TNA wrestler Bully Ray at his facility in Florida ever since he signed the deal.
Well, I hope he catches him quick, because TNA wrestling is losing a lot of money.
Well, I guess that's why they have to hire gimmicks like that guy.
Yeah. I mean, what I heard is, like, you know, just booking and everything they're doing is losing money.
Right.
Badly.
And of course, this past week we had the big boxing match between Amir Khan and Zab Judah.
It was so bad that loyal Judah fans are calling him out on this one.
Yeah, he just he didn't have it. He was kind of out of sorts there. I think it was the first round he got knocked out in.
Yeah.
And now I was saying this, the main event for tomorrow night, Friday night fights is going to be for the chance to fight Amir Khan next. So it's going to be a pretty big fight all of a sudden. I had never heard of that stipulation before, hearing about the Amir Khan win there the other night, but apparently just the other day I got a press release about that's going to be an elimination fight now, and the two guys fighting on that card there are actually... number 3 and number 4 in the division. And it's Victor Tayo and Anthony Peterson, if I remember correctly. I'll have to double check that. I've got to go through the boxing schedule anyway. And also this weekend we have a big Strike Force event. Heavyweight fight on Showtime Saturday at 10 Eastern. We have Fedor Emelianenko fighting Dan Henderson. It's going to be a huge fight there because Emelianenko has lost 3 in a row, I believe. Yeah. 3 in a row. 2 in a row. 2 in a row. And he's actually fighting Dan Henderson, who's moving up to heavyweight for this fight. And he's a lighter guy, but Fedor has actually been working on his boxing, too. There was a video I saw this last week where he was boxing a famous German boxer. I can't for the life of me think of the guy's name right now. But he was doing pretty well in sparring with a boxer. So he's getting Ryan Anderson there's on the feet striking. He's pretty much well known for his heavy-handed right-hand attack there in the cage. Also on this Strikeforce card, we have a women's welterweight championship bout between Marluse Conan and Maisha Tate. And this is probably going to be, or this is, the, really the biggest female MMA fight that's happened since the merger of, or the buyout, I should say, of Strikeforce by the UFC. So it's going to be interesting to see how they move on from there. And it's really one of those fights with a lot of pressure on both women, I think. And it's one of those situations where it's really for all of the women these two are going to be fighting for to really represent the entire women's division there. Because of Dana White's obvious sentiments against women fighting in MMA. And he's basically claimed that there's just not enough to make a competitive circuit for women's fighting in the UFC in the past. Although he hasn't really come out, as far as I know, and bashed women in Strikeforce and said that they were going to do away with it as soon as possible or anything like that. And obviously the Showtime contracts and everything have put a wrench in any plans to change much of anything that Strikeforce is doing, business as usual, so to speak. So I don't know whether that's the reason why he hasn't criticized it or changed anything, or whether it's just that's just the way it is. Also on the card, we have Robbie Lawler versus Tim Kennedy. That's going to be a really interesting fight, I think. Kennedy is a little bit newer to the sport. Lawler's been around a long time, but Kennedy is in peak physical shape. He's a U.S. Army paratrooper, so he's obviously a tough guy with very good background with hand-to-hand combat. I'll have to see how that goes. We also have Paul Daly versus Tyron Woodley. That's an interesting fight. Daly's coming off the loss to Nick Diaz, who's going to be fighting George St. Pierre in the UFC next. And we have Scott Smith versus Tarek Seffiadi. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. I have never heard of this guy. But Scott Smith has been made famous a little bit by his battles with Kung Lee. And Kung Lee just recently came out and said that because of his movie career, he's pretty much decided that he is not coming back to MMA with Strikeforce. If at all, he's coming back with the UFC. So he's waiting for them to give him a call, and he's going to try to get a fight with the UFC. He still wants to do MMA, but his movie roles are taken over. And he actually just got a leading role in a movie with, I think it's called Dragon Eyes, with Jean-Claude Van Damme as a supporting actor. So that was interesting. He said he actually had the chance to spar with Jean-Claude Van Damme, and Van Damme had to take a break after like a minute because he has a heart condition now. But they were really going at it there for a little while. We also have a little bit of a preliminary card. Those fights that I just mentioned on this card are the main card of fights. We have a preliminary card with a lightweight fight between Jesus Cavalcante and Bobby Green. A welterweight fight between Eduardo Pamplona versus Tyler Stinson. Another women's welterweight fight between Alexis Davis and Julie Kedzie. A middleweight fight between Derek Brunson and one of our former guests, Lumumba Sayers.
Yeah.
We actually got an offer to interview him again this week. His agent there forgot we had already interviewed him. Finally, there's a heavyweight bout between Brian Humes and Gabriel Salinas Jones. And, of course, we have UFC 133 coming up next weekend that we'll talk about a little bit later. But I want to get to the boxing before we do that. Were there any other big fights last weekend that you were able to watch or get any news on?
Card on HBO, which was unfortunately was only a one-fight card. That kind of sucks. Let me just take a look. Trying to remember Friday night. I was kind of busy and had party the next day I had to be at. Let me just take a quick look at you. Trying to remember, a friend of mine did send me some information. While I'm looking up, I can talk more about the Judah fight. I have some friends that are, you know, Judah supporters. And the one guy, I mean, he just really ripped me to shreds after it was over, called it a, you know, a pathetic quit job. And, you know, he's like, and ever since that happened, he's actually set up a page on Facebook where he, like, every day he names a fighter that has shown heart in the ring. He's like, recently hear from David Haye, and then recently from Zab Judah, he's like, I got to set up my guys, and they're just all heart. They just go out there and bring it, you know, every day. So the first guy was Smokey Joe Frazier, Evander Holyfield. Who else did we have on there? I think Glenn Johnson was on there. Arturo Gatti was on there. All guys just brought it every day. So just looking at the last day, played from Friday night. I did not get to see the main event. I had dozed off by that time. That was Anthony Durrell, the brother of former Olympian Andre Durrell, former member of the Super Six. He scored a second-round knockout over Kevin Angle. We also had a...
I did watch that fight, actually. And an interesting little tidbit I read after the fact was that Angle had to lose 24 pounds in a week or something like that.
That's rough. I've done that. That's rough. Also on the card, a little bit of an upset with Aaron Martinez, won a technical decision over Joseph Aguilar, I believe it was pronounced. But I don't know. I remember that fight where Aguilar, an undefeated fighter, got knocked down and definitely showed me he has a weakness in his chin. And Martinez was winning the fight, and they had a pretty nasty clash of heads in the last round, and the right fighter won. Also on that card, winning by knockout, was a former guest of ours, Don Deal, as we call him, All-Scale Livingston. He had a nice little win on that card. Looking to see if there's anything else on Friday night. Nothing really earth-shattering, no huge names out there. Let me just take a look on Saturday, see if there are any other title fights on Saturday that I might have missed, maybe around the world. Let's say the only fight that I saw was Khan versus Judah, and I was disappointed, not because Khan won, but actually, Amir Khan is a good young fighter. He's got a weak chin, so that makes his fights really exciting. I don't think that he is going to be, the savior of the sport. I shouldn't say it that way, but I don't think he's going to be like the next superstar. I don't think he's going to be like the next Manny Pacquiao or Floyd Mayweather. I think, his chin will get exposed before that happens. Whether it's by a guy, well, it won't be Manny Pacquiao, of course, they're both trained by Freddie Roach, but say it's by a guy like Floyd Mayweather, and he's a little bit small for Sergio Martinez, but that fight could eventually happen. A good fight if he ever moves up the weight could be Chavez Jr. That would be interesting. Just looking, we had in Mexico, Orlando Salido with an 11-round kick over Kenichi Yamaguchi. I'm trying to see what else we had in the States. Like I said, I didn't get to see anything except from the Khan Judah fight. On that card, we had Peter Kid Chocolate Quillen with a stoppage over Jason Mahoulier. We had one Judah was won on that card. Josiah Judah won a majority decision over Rafael Jastrzewski. James Kirkland back on the winning track again, and second round knockout over Alexis Haleros. And then really just the rest of the fights in the States were you know, small local cards. So that was mainly for, that was the main boxing for this past weekend.
We also had Tyson Fury versus Derek Chisora. Fury won a unanimous decision over Chisora in a heavyweight fight at Wembley Stadium in London. Fury had some rocky moments early on and withstood elite Chisora onslaught to win on the scorecards. And according to this report, the fight was sloppy and largely one-sided, but somehow entertaining at the same time.
Sometimes they are, you know, it's funny like that. But, you know, tell me this. If I'm doing rankings, you know, for fighters, I don't even have to see the guy fight. If a guy's named Tyson Fury, he's got to be a top 10 fighter. He's got to be. He could be 0-0, and he's already ranked in the top 10 just because of his name. If you're named Tyson Fury, you've got to be able to fight.
Yeah, he was named after Mike Tyson, too.
Sure wasn't named after Cecily Tyson?
No, and he wasn't named after Tyson Chicken. That's for damn sure.
I'm telling you, if I ever have a child, I'm going to name him Purdue. It's a Frank Purdue.
Anyway, we have Friday Night Fights, like I said, this tomorrow night on ESPN2. You can look for me in the audience. I'll be ringside, literally, the press row. It's probably the best fight I've been able to attend. Even though I haven't seen it yet, obviously, it's the best records of any two guys I've ever seen in this circuit here at the Cosmopolitan fighting in the main event. We have Lamont Peterson. I think I said Anthony earlier. That's his brother. Lamont Peterson, 28-1 with 14 knockouts at light welterweight, fighting Victor Manuel Callao, who is 26-1 with 18 knockouts. So pretty comparable records there, pretty evenly matched. And the winner is going to fight Amir Khan next in what will probably be a multi-million-dollar contract. And a lot of buzz about Khan lately. He's seen now as one of the most exciting boxers. So, and he's taken the tough fights. You know, when you got people that are literally, you know, backing out of fight deals because they don't want to fight him, that's a pretty big deal. Also on this card, light heavyweight Edison Miranda. He's been around. He's 34-5, 29 knockouts. He's fighting a guy named Jordanis Despine, who's 8-1. Or Despain.
I mean, on paper, that looks a little bit like a mismatch because Miranda has a lot of experience. He's fought for a world title. You know, he's been there, but you look at it this way. His opponent is a very highly touted amateur fighter, had a lot of amateur victories. And then also, you know, Miranda has definitely shown that he's, you know, seen his best days. I mean, Kelly Pavlik really ruined him a couple years ago. And then he's been, you know, just destroyed, you know, in other fights, especially against Lucian Butte. That was pretty destructive.
Right. Also, we have Sergey Kovalev, undefeated at 15-0, 13 knockouts, fighting Douglas Otieno, who is, just lost him. He's 23-6 with 12 knockouts. And that's a 10-round light heavyweight fight, by the way, and it's for the vacant NABA USA light heavyweight title. So I wonder if they're going to be televising that. I would think they should. Super featherweight fight between Ramses Barthelemy, 12-0 with 10 knockouts. He's fighting Gerardo Robles, who's 14-9 with 6 knockouts. And I know there's an Anthony Robles, who's a one-legged wrestler we talked about. He was undefeated in his final season there in college wrestling. So I wonder if they're related. They could be. And there's a couple other fights. Badu Jack, 6-0 at light heavyweights, fighting a six-rounder. got 5 knockouts. He's fighting Timothy Hall Jr., who's 6-11 with 4 knockouts. And at lightweight, we have Cameron Creel making his pro debut against Frankie Martinez, who's 0-3. Also, at, on Friday at Mohegan Sun, there's a Georgefield card, CES Boxing. We have Marius Wach, W-A-C-H. Hope I'm pronouncing that right. 12-round heavyweight fight. He's fighting against Kevin McBride. Wach is 24-0 is Wach with 12 knockouts. And this is for the vacant WBC International heavyweight title. McBride is 35-9 with 29 knockouts, one draw. I'm pretty sure his last fight is one that I was able to watch. Because he fought Fimpo. It was his fight with Thomas Adamek, who really smacked him all around the ring pretty badly. And Rudy Petronelli was over there in McBride's corner. Still doing the good work there. So on this card, Elvin Ayala, 23-5 with 11 knockouts, one draw, fighting Derek Findlay, 18-11 knockouts for the vacant WBC USNBC middleweight title. And we have Jose Antonio Rivera on the card, 40-6 with 24 knockouts, one draw, fighting Paul Mpendo, 7-7 with three knockouts and four draws. And I know Jose Rivera hasn't been around for a while, but great boxer. So we're definitely hoping that he does well in this fight. And we have another fight in Las Vegas that I'm going to have to miss. So it's on the same night, Friday, as Friday night fights over at the Cosmopolitan. This is actually a joint venture between KZ Event Productions, Golden Boy, and Don Chargin. It's going to be on Telefuturo. Light heavyweight fight is going to be the main event. Beboot Shumanov, the Beast. He's 11-1 with 7 knockouts, fighting Danny Santiago, 31-4 with 19 knockouts and 1 draw. And this is for the WBA World Light Heavyweight title and the International Boxing Association Light Heavyweight title. Also on the card, we have Ravshan Houdan Azarov, 14-0, 12 knockouts, fighting Hector Munoz, 19-5. 12 knockouts, one draw. And the WBA International Light Heavyweight title is also on the line between Gayrat Amadov, 16-0 with 11 knockouts, and Max Hayman, who's 24-11 with 14 knockouts and four draws. There's a Kia boxing card out there in Philadelphia also on Friday.
Yes, there it is.
Nothing really flashy on there, but just interesting. It's at the Asylum Arena. Never heard of it.
Yeah, that's the former New Alhambra, the former quote-unquote arena. I've covered a good number of fights there. I've been to a lot of fights there. I've scouted a lot of other fighters there. Just taking a look at the card, here's what we got here. Actually, what's funny is, some of these guys that I've seen a handful of them. I actually personally do not know. I've seen some of them. I've covered some of them. I personally don't know anybody on this card. I've seen Greg Hotshot Hackett. He's a Philly kid, 23 years old. He's 2-8. He's loser of, four straight fights. So he's on the card. Let me see the gentleman he's fighting who. I just had it up a second ago. He's fighting by the name of Juan Rodriguez Jr. He's a Jersey kid. He's 6-0, 3 knockouts. You kind of don't have to guess who the favorite is in that fight. Main event is a gentleman by the name of Coy Evans. And if you look on there, he's not really much of a knockout puncher. If you look at his record, he's 10-0 with 2 knockouts. So you can say, oh, this guy is not a knockout fighter. I was at a fight card last year where he knocked the guy out cold. You know, tough, sturdy kid, and he blasted him. So Corey Adams is a big young prospect. He's an undefeated kid. He's going to be the fight butter of this card.
Tough, sturdy.
He's fighting, once again, 6-12. He's been stopped 4 times. So, I mean, he's lost 5 straight, couple of them by stoppage. So, obviously, Corey Evans is going to be a big-time favorite there. Going a while. Okay, his last fight was back in January, which is a decision. His last knockout was about 16 months ago was the fight that I covered. Took a fighter that was 11-10 and knocked him out cold. It was actually an impressive win. The picture I got for the report had the guy on the ground out cold and Evan standing on the ropes, which is pretty awesome.
Well, on Saturday, we have a pretty interesting card in San Jose, Costa Rica, worthy of a mention here. We have an interim WBA World Super Middleweight title on the line. The main event there between Brian McGee, who's 34-4, one more knockouts, and Jamie Barboza, who's 17-4 with 8 knockouts. And a very interesting fight there. Also, the WBA Fedolatin lightweight title is on the line between Richard O. 4-2 with knockouts. Brian Vasquez and Alan Herrera are fighting as well for the WBA Fedolatin super featherweight title. Vasquez is 26-0 with 14 knockouts, and Herrera is 25-2 with 16 knockouts. And a couple other fights worth mentioning here. We have Elvin Perez, who's 21-4 with 14 knockouts, 3 draws, fighting Walter Castillo, 14-1 with 12 knockouts for the WBA Fedicentro light welterweight title. And finally, a super featherweight 9-rounder. It's weird. 9 rounds? I've never heard of that. Between Berman Sanchez, 24-3 with 3 draws, 17 knockouts, and Joel Sarug, 20-6 with 15 knockouts, 2 draws. And that's for the WBA Fedolatin super featherweight title. A lot of titles. A lot of long titles on that card there.
Well, I think the way they have it worked out, well, is if you can, like, say the name of the title all in one breath, say the name of the title all in one breath and not stutter, then you're deserving of winning it.
Or you can fight for it.
Yeah, or you can fight for it, absolutely. But then you can say the WBA, Silver Belt, Battle Latino, Junior Heavyweights, but super cruiserweight, you know, international champion, blah, blah, blah. Okay, you said all that? Okay, you're deserving to fight for this belt.
Well, we have a couple other fights here on Saturday. An interesting matchup here in Indonesia for the WBA World Minimum Weight title. I know some people in Indonesia. I might be able to get in. I doubt I can afford the plane ticket, though.
Yeah.
We have a minimum weight main event between Muhammad Rahman, 64-10 with 33 knockouts at minimum weight. He's got 5 draws. He's fighting Porn Sawan, Poor Pramukh. That's a weird name. That guy is 22-3 with 1 draw, 16 knockouts to his credit. And whatever the PABA is, their super flyweight title is also on the line. Their interim super flyweight title in the co-main event there between Ali Rahman. We got Rahman and Rahman. Super flyweights here. 16-1 is Rahman with 11 knockouts. He's fighting Pech Trang Sor Yupinda, who's 7-1 with 4 knockouts. Big new ones there. Let's see what else we got. And we actually have some bare knuckle boxing, believe it or not, once we get through this. Would you believe that there's still organized bare knuckle boxing going on?
I can't.
Wow. There is. Wow, my computer's trying to crash on me. What's going on? It's called Bad Boy Fights. I mean, I'm waiting for this to load. It's going to be Bobby Gunn. Sorry. Bobby Gunn, not The Rock. Bobby, the Celtic Warrior Gunn. He's 21-4 as a boxer. He's going to be fighting Chris the Butcher Thompson. 12-4 MMA and 15-5 as a boxer. And it's a bare-knuckle boxing match. It's going to be in August in Arizona. I don't have the exact date here for some reason. But it's on the blog. Bare-knuckle boxing is a stand-up fight where the contestants use their fists only. There'll be no kicking, kneeing, elbows, wrestling, throwdowns, biting, or eye-gouging.
No biting. That doesn't sound fun. Bobby Gunn, I think he fought for the cruiserweight title against Thomas Adamack. I think it was Adamack. I know whoever he fought, he got stopped in 5 rounds.
Yeah,
might have been Adamack. I don't have it in front of me.
And the way the
him on our show a couple years ago.
What?
I tried to get him on our show a couple years ago.
Bobby Gunn?
Yeah.
I know I've definitely put stuff on the blog about him in the past. He was making a lot of news as a boxer during that time when he was getting up to the Adamick fight and afterwards. But I haven't heard much from him recently, and now this came up. They're going to fight in a 6-sided boxing ring.
Wow.
It's going to be like a hexagon, I think they call it. And there's going to be MMA fights on the same night and regular boxing matches. The fights will be contested in rounds of 90 seconds with a 1-minute rest period, 5 rounds for a regular contested match, and 7 rounds for a championship match. So it's not going to go 100 rounds like the old days.
Where's Donnell Sullivan when you need him?
Yeah. He was actually born in my old hometown there, Abington. Or lived there. He retired there, actually. He wasn't born there. He was born in Dorchester, my real hometown. But, August 5th, 2011, at the Fort McDowell Casino in Arizona. Doors open at 6 p.m. Fights begin at 8. VIP seating is sold out, so you have to get ringside, reserved, or general standing tickets between $25 and $45 for those. It's definitely going to be an interesting card. I don't think I've ever even heard of bare knuckle boxing being still perpetrated in any area of the country. Legally, anyway. I'm kind of interested to see how that turns out. We shall see. Getting back to the regular boxing schedule. And a couple more interesting fights here from south of the border. Scheduled for Saturday, we have Jackie Nava at Super Bantamweight fighting in Chiapas, Mexico, Saturday. He's 24-3 with 3 draws, 11 knockouts. He's fighting Ana Maria Torres. Or she, I guess. She's fighting Maria Torres, sorry. 25-3 with 15 knockouts and 3 draws. And it's 10 rounds, 2 minutes each. It's a lot of fights for females. It's surprising. That's probably why I made the mistake to... you have, you know, under 20 fights, period, for these female fighters because there's such a limited competition. But these two have over 20 wins each. So that's very rare. They're the main event on that card. The co-main event there is a 10-round super flyweight fight between Felipe Oracuda, 20-1 with 16 knockouts, and Jesus Vasquez, 19-6 with 17 knockouts and 1 draw. So I suppose that's our Jesus fight of the week. And then we go down to Iztacalco, Mexico. There's a super featherweight 12-rounder between Gamaliel Diaz, 32-9 with 16 knockouts, 2 draws, and Abraham Gomez, 13-17 with 3 knockouts, 5 draws. And this is for the WBC Caribbean Boxing Federation super featherweight title. And there's a female fight on that card too. Minimum weights, Maria Salinas, 8-1 with 1 draw, 3 knockouts, fighting Tanya Cosme, who's 2-1 with 1 draw, no knockouts. That's for the vacant WBC youth female minimum weight title. And let's see. Oh, we get the mismatch of the week from Huigalpa, Nicaragua. Danny Arazo at super bantamweight fighting a 6-rounder. He's 3-2 with 1 knockout, 1 draw. He's fighting Alvaro Perez, who's 20-3 with 12 knockouts and 1 draw. And then nothing on this card is over 6 rounds. But that's really the only big mismatch there. Let's see what else we got. There's another Tyson fighting over in the Philippines, in Cebu, Philippines. AJ Banal at bantamweight, 24-1 with 19 knockouts, 1 draw, fighting Tyson Cave, 15-1 with 5 knockouts for the WBO Asia Pacific bantamweight title. Another super bantamweight fight on that card. Sort of interesting here is Michael Domingo. He's 40-15 with 2 draws, 18 knockouts, fighting Richard Simosier, who's 18-3 with 7 knockouts. Well, we have a fight over in the Ukraine on Saturday for the interim WBO light middleweight title. Zarbek Bysangurov, 25-1 with 19 knockouts, fighting Mike Miranda, 34-3 with 31 knockouts. The co-main event there is Viktor Plotnikov, 25-1 with 12 knockouts, fighting Valery Brazink, 25-0 with 16 knockouts, 1 draw, fighting for the vacant Ukraine welterweight title. That's kind of weird because usually guys with those type of records would be fighting for a world title. only one loss among them, over 50 fights, and they're fighting for the Ukraine title, while guys who are fighting for a world title. that's wild. Going back to the United States here, Fox broadcast from Softball County Arena in Denver, Colorado on Saturday. have a 10-rounder between light welterweights Mike Alvarado, 30-0 with 22 knockouts, and Gabriel Martinez, 27-2, 1 draw and 14 knockouts. And this is for the WBC Continental Americas light welterweight title and the vacant IBF Latino light welterweight title. I want to have a Latino title on the line between two Latinos. Let's put it there. Let's see if I'll see that. That takes us into Sunday. We have a fight over in Hyogo, Japan on Sunday, bantamweights, for the vacant OPBF bantamweight title. That's Oriental Pacific Boxing Federation right there. That's a fight between Zero Fit Jirobi Zuyama. He's 23-1 with 8 knockouts, 3 draws, and Raleigh Matsushita, 28-8 with 16 knockouts. And I think that's pretty much it until next week. But, before we talk about UFC 133 next Saturday, I did want to mention that the Pro Elite company is back. MMA fans might remember Pro Elite having a really kick-ass social network platform back when they were affiliated with Elite XC, and they were the ones that got the contract with Showtime. They have a podcast interview from way back with the old Pro Elite president on fnu.mypodcast.com. And things, but now Pro Elite is back. They're making some news because they're having a fight in Blaisdell Arena in Hawaii. The last time I checked their website, just hoping that they would recapture that that whole social network thing that they had going, it was pretty bare bones. Haven't been back in a little while, but they have a little ticker there. Talking about the stock, I guess it's a publicly traded stock, Pro Elite, and it was trading at 27 cents a share. So, you know, there's all kinds of speculation that they're going to go bankrupt, they're going to fall apart, but now it seems like they're making a comeback. It's a fight on, let's see, I think it's going to be in August at some point, doesn't say here. But, Andre Arlovsky is going to be in the main event. He's going to fight Ray Lopez in a heavyweight fight. On that card, in the Blaisdell Arena in Hawaii. And Lopez is an MMA and boxing veteran. It's also going to be the MMA debut of Reagan Penn, former UFC lightweight champion BJ Penn's younger brother, we talked about earlier. And a couple other UFC rejects, I guess you could call them. Joe Riggs and Kendall Grove will be having a rematch, an earlier fight on that card. Arlovsky has been pretty beaten up in the past few fights. Most recently, he got knocked out of the first round of the heavyweight Grand Prix by Sergey Karatanov. He also lost to Antonio Silva, Brett Rogers, and Fedor Emelianenko. His last win was in October of 2008 against former IFL heavyweight contender Ben Rothwell. And Lopez is 5-2 in professional MMA, but he's fought on a lot of small shows throughout his career and recently defeated Rob Marrow at King of the Cage 69 by TKO in the first round. Now, getting to UFC 133, it's going to be the main event of Rashad Evans versus Tito Ortiz, which is a rematch, again, of an earlier fight. It was a pretty interesting fight. It was a tie in the first fight. Obviously, there's a lot for both guys to prove. Phil Davis was supposed to be the original opponent for Rashad, but he pulled out due to an injury. And obviously, Rashad was also supposed to fight John Jones, but he pulled out because of surgery that he was expecting to need on his hand. And it turned out he wasn't going to need the surgery. Now he's going to be fighting Quentin Rampage Jackson at the end of September, September 24th. But actually, Tito Ortiz just made the news recently because he was in a car accident, which when I saw the headline, I was thinking, oh, they're going to have to change the card again. But it was just a fender bender, really. It was a three-car accident, a little bit of a pile-up. But the bad news was it was in his Rolls Royce that he housed up. And it's not covered by insurance, he said. So he's going to have to foot the bill himself. So it's a good thing he's staying busy here with his fight career.
No shit.
But I wouldn't think he would be able to afford a Rolls Royce. I guess he's doing a lot of endorsements, you know, since he hasn't fought in so long. Just had one fight, one quick fight on his comeback, and now he's signed for this fight. But apparently he's doing quite well if he's driving around a Rolls Royce. Maybe that was from back when he was a little bit bigger, more of a big deal in his height of his career. But who knows? You know, he's still in the mix. He's still a viable championship contender. And we'll see how he does against Rashad Evans. You could see Tito Ortiz versus John Jones instead of Rashad Evans. But also, Nick Pates was originally slated to take on Michael McDonald at the event. But McDonald was pulled to replace Norifumi Yamamoto for a UFC 130 bout with Chris Carriasso. And Ivan Menjivar is going to step in to face Pace this event. Let's see what else we got. Victor Belfort is on the card, a middleweight fight between him and Yoshihiro Akiyama. Should be interesting. Welterweights, Dennis Holman and Brian Ebersole. Jorge Rivera is a Boston guy from the same circuits that I used to watch out there in Boston. In Boston area. He's fighting Konstantinos Filippou. We got Rory McDonald versus Mike Pyle. Matt Hamill on the preliminary card will be fighting Alexander Gustafsson. Seems pretty soon for Hamill to be back on the card after his last loss to Rampage there. It was pretty bad, but guess he didn't have any major suspensions. Also have a featherweight fight between Chad Mendes and Rani Yaha. And on the preliminary card, we have Ivan Menjivar versus Nick Pace. I mentioned that. Johnny Hendricks is fighting Mike Pierce. Mike Brown fighting Nam Phan from The Ultimate Fighter there. Rafael Natal versus Paul Bradley. Rounding off that card. So that's next Saturday, UFC 133. August 6th. And we have our special guest. We might as well give him a call now. Perfect timing. Pretty much gone through the whole boxing and MMA schedules here, although we haven't covered the rest of the smaller fights going on. And MMA. We'll get to that a little later if we end early with our guest. Dr. Glenn House is going to talk to us about the pitfalls of combat sports, I guess. have to try the backup. Well, we're going to try the other number we have for him. Let's reach him there. So what's going on in Eagle territory out there in Philly? Are you thrilled?
Well, I don't think we've made the splashes of that the Patriots have. I mean, they got Ocho Cinco. The Patriots got Ocho Cinco and Albert Haynesworth.
I heard about Haynesworth, but when did the Ocho Cinco deal go through?
I that was the first one I saw. We got former Eagle Donnie McNabb. He's going to the Vikings. Eagles just completed the trade today with the Cardinals. They're sending Kevin Cobb, who never panned out in Philadelphia. Some people think he's like a first-round talent. I was never high on the guy. He got sent down to Arizona, and we got Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, who was a former first-round pick about 3 years ago, and a second-round pick for next year. So we'll see how that pans out, hopefully well. And Eagles signed Jason Babin from the Tennessee Titans. Babin, who they had 2 years ago, and they let walk away to sign a one-year deal. Now they're bringing him back and signing him for, like, $5 million a season. But that's all the Eagles have done so far, which is kind of perplexing because apparently they have 15 unrestricted free agents and they're going to let them all walk, yet they've only signed two people.
Yeah, they definitely didn't waste any time, these guys, getting into
another chance. They never had to rock and roll.
Yeah, it's, actually, I saw on Twitter there, the Ashton Kutcher was...
Right.
It sounds like these guys are trading players like baseball cards.
Yeah,
all right, well, I'm trying Glenn House on his backup number here. Let's see if that worked. Hello? Hello?
Hello, did you hear somebody, Rich?
I heard somebody.
I heard somebody too.
Hello, Dr. House? Dr. House, can you hear us? Now let me try him again.
Yeah, I hear, like, everything I'm hearing is jumbled. I mean, that could have been him, but I don't know.
Right. While to connect for some reason before it even rings. It's kind of weird.
Hi, it's Glenn House. Can't get the phone right now, but just leave me a name and number, and I'll get right back to you. Thanks a lot. Have a good day.
Oh, we're going to have an answering machine.
Oh, yeah.
Got a lot of technical difficulties.
Not a lot. Hi, what's going on? I can't get the phone right now, but just leave me a name and number, and I'll get right back to you. Thanks a lot. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Now, give me another minute here.
I was going out. I can't get the phone right now, but just leave me a name and number, and I'll get right back. Thanks a lot. Have a good day.
Hey, Dr. House, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron from the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show. We're trying to reach you for an interview here. We're on the air until 10 p.m. Eastern. You can actually call in if that's easier. It's 347-324-3228. If we can't reach you here within the next few minutes, you can call right in and talk to us that way. Thanks. Bye. So we'll give him a minute, I guess. Figure things out. See what's going on. What the heck is that?
Is that you or him?
Oh, it's me calling him back, I guess. That's new.
Is it taking
over by the exorcist? I just can't get the phone right now, but just leave me a name and number.
It's automatically dialed for some reason there.
I'm telling you, the phone's got the taken over by the exorcist or something.
Well, let's try the other number, just for shits and giggles, I guess. Dr. House is not in the house.
You know, I worked a lot of years, doing medical conferences for doctors and everything. And the one thing, you know, I got to realize, especially with doctors in his case, you know, do a lot with trauma and, injuries like that. very good chance that, you know, he may have been on call or I don't know.
Let's try one more time here.
I was going out. I can't get the phone right now, but just leave me a name and number, and I'll get right back.
What can you do?
When you're dealing with medical positions, you know, you have a lot of them on emergency calls, and, you know, shit happens.
Yes, it does. So we'll have to wait to see if he calls in and tries to connect with us that way. I know we definitely had somebody answered the first time that we called back.
I remember, I heard the voice.
But it sounded like it was a bad connection. Maybe he's waiting to get into a better reception area. That's why he's not answering. So hopefully he will call in. If not, we'll give him another try, maybe in about 10 minutes or so. But I'm pretty much exhausted. Our scheduled.
Well, let's talk about other things. You know, I mean, we are a very versatile group here. We can talk about baseball. We can talk about football. We can talk about hockey. We can talk about basketball, leaving from out of Mongolia, professional wrestling, women's World Cup soccer, but for an opt out. You name it, I'll talk about it.
Yeah, I got to get back to writing for Opposing Views now about all this football news. You're giving me news I didn't even know about with the Ocho Cinco Patriots. I'm out of the loop.
All right, we got a third. This is where you got to be.
Yeah. So, I don't know. The Red Sox are doing all right. The Phillies are doing better.
I think the Sox lost tonight and the Phillies are losing right now. That's tough.
Oh, well. Philly still has the best record in baseball, don't they?
They're true, but they're, right now they're playing the Giants, who beat them out last year. And they split the first two games, and the Giants are winning the third game. That makes me angry.
Uh-oh.
I'm going tomorrow night. Like I said, my interest rate would be... I'm
trying a third number.
Mr.
Happen.
Yes.
Hey, this is Ramble Rouser and Rich Bergeron. How's it going?
Very good. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, sorry we didn't connect with you sooner there. We were dealing with some technical difficulties on what phone number we needed to call.
Right. And my cell phone doesn't work at my house at all.
All right. Well, we
might have been the bad connection we were trying.
Yeah, that's Tony the Tornado Pentacal there. He's our co-host.
All right.
How you doing, Doc?
I'm good. Yourself?
Oh, doing great. It's a Thursday night, you know. Finally getting to the weekend.
Right.
Dr. House, we obviously wanted to talk to you because you had some experience with neurological injuries and that sort of thing, and combat sports is one of those areas where that happens a lot. And we talk a lot about on the show the differences between mixed martial arts and boxing specifically, but it's also got implications in wrestling too. We cover a little wrestling. So did you have any experience with combat sports injuries at all?
So you're talking about, so what you just said, football, you're talking about karate, wrestling, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, any martial arts. Any boxing, wrestling, anything that's one-on-one fight type stuff.
Yeah, I have a lot to say about those things.
So what do you think is the big difference? I mean, I don't know how closely you follow mixed martial arts and boxing, but one of the studies that I saw that was done a few years ago said that there were a lot more concussions per capita per fight in mixed martial arts than there were in boxing, but it seems like boxing has more long-lasting debilitating injuries like pugilistic dementia that happens more often.
Yep, exactly. Well, I don't know, you know, I don't follow martial arts to know anything about that, but from the standpoint of head injuries, if it's even equivalent to boxing, I mean, there's some worrisome things that you just mentioned, pugilistic dementia. But really, you know, what happens is that the brain is a bunch of wires and chemicals, and that's basically it. And when you are forcefully slamming up against your skull or the fluid between the two and stopping automatically, you're stretching those nerve fibers. You can permanently damage them. You can damage. I mean, what we're really moving towards is a concussion. Is truly a traumatic brain injury. There is damage that occurs, and so before we used to talk about whether it's football or boxing or the wrestling, whatever you're doing, martial arts. If there is, we used to say, oh, they're a little cloudy, they got cobwebs, they're a little dazed, shake it off and go back in, and we really are learning that there's a lot more to it. From an injury, from a long-term effects standpoint.
Right. And what do you think is worse? Something like you know, repeated concussions that happen in an MMA fight, or these 12-round fights that fighters have where it's in boxing where their object is to really knock the guy out and punch him in the head more than anything.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I was explaining recently was, you know, I mean, with boxing, the objective is to hit him so hard in the head that their skull goes one way and their brain comes into the skull so hard that they can't stand up. You know, and by doing that, you're basically, the only way you can really do that is to interfere with some of those wires, those nerves that we have in our brain, or the chemicals. And so that's how that happens when you can't stand. And you could be stretching, you could have stretch injuries, and they've recently been showing that individuals who, whether it's boxing or it's football, it's another thing we're really looking at now is football. And, you know, those aren't the boxing type of blows, probably more, you know, at some point than like you're talking about with combat sports. You know, those are actually purposeful hits. And we're finding some people, not everyone, but some people, when they actually are looking at their brains later in life or either after autopsy, there's some similarities to Alzheimer's. There's without the, what we call the plaques that form. You know, I was talking to one neuropsychologist recently, and he said, you know, this is not proven. He said, I think we're probably going to someday find out that there's some kind of genetic predisposition. Why does one person box forever? Why does one person play football forever, never get a concussion, never have any long-term effects, and then someone else does? And, you know, how we're made, how we're wired, maybe there's a case there.
All right. Yeah, I've definitely seen a lot of fights where, you know, a guy should be on the ground taking as many hits as he does, and it's just, and whether it's because he has a hard head or whatever the story is. I know a lot of people have thicker skulls, you know, by genetic design, but I hadn't heard anything about the design of the actual brain that would prevent that knockouts or damage.
One of the things that they're doing, and also is doing some cognitive testing and neuropsychological testing, even screening, one thing called the impact test. So you can go to impacttest.com and see what I'm talking about. But they're doing some baseline screens. They then maybe do an annual one, or they do one after someone has an injury. Some people have problems, some people don't. And I think it's you know, very important to know if you are, you know, having a decline from that. In Colorado, they passed one of the most stringent, strict, and laws there is about going back to play after an injury. And calling an injury what we, you know, used to call concussion, even before we may have, you know, sent somebody back. Now, it is important to know, this is crucial, it's the most crucial thing I could say. There's something called second impact syndrome. So, and what that is basically you get a concussion while you have a concussion. So you know, get out there, you get a little good, you get a little wobbly, you keep going. In football, a lot what happens, and we've seen this. In fact, one of the reasons for the law passing was because of the high school students that happened. But if you have a concussion, you get a concussion, you can get rapid and fatal swelling of the brain, and it can either kill you or leave you severely debilitated with a brain injury. So identifying a quote unquote concussion or cobwebs is crucial.
Right. Interesting.
Dr. House, one thing I always mentioned, I boxed for a number of years. I sparred for a long time. I mean, there were times that I took some shots, you know, in the ring, and, you know, definitely there was, I had, it was actually a fight that was more of an exhibition. I was getting ready for a big fight on a national stage, and I was fighting, it was an exhibition, and I really wasn't that into it, you know, because I was looking towards this big fight. And the guy that I was up against, you know, he saw me as a potential way to get his name known. So he came out there full blast. And I eventually did win, but this was after he put me down the canvas twice.
And one time I got up, and I'm still really hazy about all the details. And I remember talking to my dad after the fight, who was there in attendance and videoing it. And he goes, do you remember what you did after that second knockdown? And I looked at him, and I didn't want to answer because I didn't know. He goes, you looked at the opposing coach and stuck your tongue out at him. And then you looked back at your own corner because my coach, knowing this big fight was coming up and this was just an exhibition, was going to stop it. And I yelled over to him, don't you dare stop this fight. And I ended up going on, and most likely, yeah, I had the bell rung a little bit. Now, this has gone back 14 years ago now. We're obviously more advanced than it was back in the 70s and the 80s, but not as advanced as it is today.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds absolutely like you're fighting. And you think about boxers, you think that they're probably a lot of times fighting with some level of concussion. Hopefully they're falling down and the fight's over. But, I agree. I think you probably had a concussion. In one sense, you could say, man, you're lucky you didn't get the same hit you got the first time because it very well could have killed you. And
right.
I had eight concussions. I played football, and I had eight concussions, and with amnesia with most of them, took me out. I mean, there was one time to where I was actually playing with a concussion, couldn't remember 1, 2, and 3. I mean, we had either deep man or cover the flat. Couldn't remember those. They'd tell me where to go. I mean, that, if I would have got a hit, probably equivalent to what gave me that, it very well could have killed me, or I'd be, you know, in a nursing home somewhere right now. So it's, and I don't think we knew that. This is in the late 80s. I don't think, the coaches were like, get back in there, you know. Well, I think I'm more aware.
Oh, absolutely. I was telling Rich, when we first started our show tonight, and he had sent me the information on you being our guest yesterday. I was reading it during my lunch break at work, obviously some of your mini biography from the email. And the one thing it made me think of was, way back in the day, like the advances that have, come around. Like I said, I was telling Rich, I said, back in the day, I said, when I was, 15 years old, I was a sophomore, I was playing football. Freshman year, I played on the freshman team. Now I'm playing with our varsity level, even though I was junior varsity, we all practiced together. And during the JV game, I as a defensive lineman, I just kind of banged, heads with another player, and it just kind of stunned me a little bit, and I was fine, played the next play. Went over to the sideline. Then during halftime, I wasn't feeling so great. I played the rest of the game because obviously you didn't have the the caution that you do now. And then it was like a day later. I still wasn't feeling well. I forgot my jersey in the locker room. I lost my jersey, and I was just forgetting things in class. And the coach sat me down for like a day, and my dad didn't want me to practice. And then all the older players are teasing me, oh, you're not tough, you're a quitter, you're a wimp. If that would ever happen today, this is back in 1991, that would never would have happened today. The coach probably would have sat me down for 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, and rightly so. Yeah, I mean, exactly. I think we've come a long way. We're learning a ton. I think objective tests, such as the impact test, is something that not only can prevent long-term maybe disability, maybe long-term problems. I mean, you've had your share of concussions, which should be considered mild traumatic brain injuries. And I have too. And, hope and pray that it actually doesn't turn out to be something a bit more detrimental down the line. The other thing I'd say is listening to your comment about, being a lineman and having a hit like that, and then you see these people flying at 20 miles an hour, full blast, and hitting head first, and both of them dropping on the ground, and they all get up and walk away. There's something also, obviously, about the physics. There's something about the why is that guy fine when someone hitting heads 2 feet away can be going down. So there's something about the physics. There's something about possibly genetics, who gets concussions more than other people. A lot of factors, but I think the key thing is we need to recognize it. We need to not take it lightly. It's very, can be very serious, can be the last thing you want to do is end up, because of a sport that you should have come out for a week or not, maybe not even finished playing the season, and you push and you end up, incapacitated in a nursing facility, or your family having to take care of you, and when they didn't have to. But on the other hand, if I'm an unbelievable football fan, love it. Love to watch combat sports of any type almost. And I tell you, you don't want to take it away. And people just need to be wise about their decisions.
Another thing that I was talking to Rich about earlier in the night, I'm a big-time football fan. I'm a Philadelphia guy, so I'm a fan of, Philadelphia sports teams. And I remember back about 10 or so years ago, we had a hockey player, Eric Lindros, whose career pretty much got ended by concussions. And I'll never forget his last game in Philadelphia. I mean, he went on about a year or so later, got traded to another team after he sat out for a year. But I remember him laying in the middle of the ice in a fetal position, unconscious. And that was, and you can tell, that really ended up being the downfall of his career. Another guy that played for the Philadelphia Eagles played back in the late 80s, early 90s, was a feared defensive back. He used to just come in, knock guys, crazy. And then he committed suicide back a year ago. It was severe depression, committed suicide. And when they did the test results on his brain, he had the I think they said, the brain of an 85-year-old Alzheimer's patient. His name's Andre Waters. And also, I watch a lot of professional wrestling. I know it's more entertainment than anything, but I enjoy it. It's always been fun. And you have a lot of guys with concussions there that were never diagnosed. A guy would get a concussion, and he's wrestling the next night, getting slammed and taking falls and, banging around. And then you had a guy like Chris Benoit just 4 years ago that, once again, was a guy in his early 40s that had the brain of an 85-year-old man and ended up killing his family and himself.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're talking about with the, we're starting to look at the repeat concussions. I just recently heard the exact same story about some guy that, I think he was a Stanford player, just an all-star that happened to, and so something's going on. So that kind of gets me back to, and I just heard this kind of this hypothesis, which is very interesting. It makes a lot of sense. Why can some people, take a hit over for all their life and then run a successful business when they're down to pros, but then someone else that, the college age probably didn't take one thousandth of the hits that person did, but as their brain has progressed into, almost like a picture of an Alzheimer's. So something besides just the force in the head is going on. But that's why screening is crucial. I bet if you would have taken any of those guys and you would have put them, had an annual screening, you would have seen a significant decline at some level in their speed of processing, their executive functioning skills, or their ability to do tasks. If you see that decline, even though they're getting grades in school, you see the objective decline, we would have heads up today.
All right. Now, obviously you can't really exercise the brain to tone the muscles or anything like that like you can do in most other parts of the body, but is there anything that people can do to increase the strength of the brain with diet or anything else like that?
I think first of all, yes, absolutely a regular diet. I have a show called on healthradio.net. It's a show. If you go to the on demand, you do a call down to Dr. House, and we cover topics. And one of the anything related to disabilities or brain injuries or spinal cord injury, strokes. One of the things that we recently interviewed, I think even last week, the omega fatty acids and the omega 3 fatty acids and how it can improve brain function, actually help recovery when somebody early studies, but they're definitely noteworthy, and that is after a brain injury, are they helping? What about somebody who already has one? They've done some animal studies to show that it's actually beneficial if you have you're on taking those medications, or not medications, but omega-3 fatty acids. So that's a go there and look into that. There's some good information there, so that may help just from a nutrition standpoint. But you can exercise the brain to a degree of to just doing tasks, for example, Sudoku. You see the older folks doing all the time. But challenging your brain, the more you challenge your brain, the more you use, the more, I mean, it actually does help. That's your conditioning for it. Compared to, not doing anything. I mean, there's clearly a benefit to that. And some even will say that some evidence will even say that doing that will prevent Alzheimer's in the elderly people. So why not make the extrapolation to especially the people doing sports? I mean, keep your brain exercising. Today it's fun. It can be video games. It can be computer games that are challenging you. So yeah, I mean, I think that exercise the brain.
Yeah, I know. I heard a few years ago there was a news story about some prisoners who'd come back with traumatic brain injuries. They were actually doing video games for therapy.
Yeah.
For hand-eye coordination and that sort of thing.
You know what? I mean, it's something. This is not a promotion, but I guess it kind of ends up being not on purpose. But we use the Wii actually in our rehabilitation for neurological patients. So, and a lot of people do that around the country. In fact, it's kind of taken on a name. It's called Wehab. So Wehab. And we use it all the time. And it used to be this really expensive equipment for balance and stuff like that. And now it's you get your $150 pad that you step on for balance, and you play these cool games, and you do these different tennis games. And we use it all the time in rehab now.
Cool. I know a few years ago there was a series online that I watched called The White Collar Brawler. It was about a couple of office workers who ended up getting into boxing on a whim, and they did a whole series on it online. It was like 10-minute videos every week of what they were up to, how they were training, and all that. And in one episode, they had a Harvard expert on who talked about concussions and brain injury, and he actually discussed a study with monkeys that was done where they put helmets on them, and they could rotate the helmets left and right and up and down. And they actually discovered that knockouts were more frequent with rotational force, whereas like when you see a boxing match and a guy gets hit right on the point of the chin,
mm-hmm.
and the rotational force is actually what knocks people out more often than just a blunt punch to the side of the head or right to the front of the forehead or the nose or anything like that. It's much more often, according to that study anyway, the rotational force.
Absolutely, and it makes sense because if you think about a frontal blow to the head, you've got all the fluid around your brain, the cerebral spinal fluid, that's your padding, and so that's an amazing cushion. But when you have a rotational, you're basically thinking your brain is on a stem of broccoli or something, or cauliflower, going down your brain stem, and your brain stem controlling everything. I mean, so that rotational force, you can see how it could much easily pull and stretch on those nerve fibers as opposed to just a frontal blow to the head. So not surprising at all.
As far as your background, when did you first get interested in medicine, and how did you get started?
I was in college. I was a biomedical science major. I planned on going to dental school and being an oral surgeon. And my junior year in college, I went snow skiing during the Christmas break. And I was an extreme skier and started skiing when I was five, racing when I was five, I mean six. And I was skiing up the cliffs in Snowbird and just lost control, went down a real steep alley and threw me out of my skis, landed headfirst on a rock, broke my neck. And I broke my neck at the C7 level, so the seventh vertebrae down from the top. And that leaves me with normal arms, normal bicep, tricep. I can extend my wrist. but I have very limited to almost no hand function or finger dexterity. So I can't tie my shoes, button my shirt without an adaptive device, which, you know, that I use. I can write, I can do a lot of things. I can examine patients, I can listen to a stethoscope, I can draw blood. But more limited with the fine dexterity things. And so I knew I couldn't go to dental school, so while I was in rehab, I asked my docs if they knew anybody that went to med school in a wheelchair, and maybe I didn't know anybody, but he had heard about somebody, so I just switched at that point and said, okay, well, I'll switch and go to med school. And I did, and I specialized in a profession called physical medicine and rehabilitation. And so I'm a physiatrist. I went to the University of Washington for med school, and then I did my residency at the Baylor University of Texas program down in Houston, where Senator Griffith is now. And then I did a spinal cord injury fellowship out in New Jersey at the Kessler Institute. So it's been a good ride.
Yeah, it's interesting. We've got a couple of things in common with you. I actually used to be a ski instructor.
Oh, yeah?
Up in New Hampshire at a mountain called Gunstock. I don't know if you ever skied there.
No.
Past, but I actually had a lesson one day with a bunch of kids, and they were like the most advanced skiers that I'd ever worked with, and they told me not to take these kids down the terrain park. So this one kid just kept begging and begging and begging. I said, all right, she's not going off any of the jumps. And next thing you know, I'm looking over, and this kid's doing like 3 flips in the air off the jump. And he landed it, but, oh, man, it gave me about a heart attack there just watching the kid. And I also had a bad injury myself in college where I fell off a roof. And talk about genetics, I was lucky, I guess, that I had was born with fused vertebrae. Because what happened was it was like a 2-story roof, and I was up there hanging a banner. It was a military school, so they call it a spirit mission. You go up there, you hang a banner on a building.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was on my way down. The roof was slippery. It was one of those tin roofs up in Vermont. And
yeah.
I slid down like a slide, went off the side of the building, grabbed a branch, and the branch broke, and I flipped around, ended up landing right on the upper part of my back. I broke 3 backbones, 2 ribs, punctured a lung, and lacerated my liver.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was in the hospital for a week, and other than getting knocked out for a minute and being kind of fuzzy around the eyes for a little while,
mm-hmm.
I didn't have any kind of paralysis or anything like that. I was very lucky, I guess. The kid that I was actually with at the time said my head brushed a blade of grass. So I was literally like probably a fraction of an inch from breaking my neck. And just by the rotation from grabbing that branch, it probably saved my life.
Wow. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's, everyone says, you know, it's the one minority group that anybody can join at any time. You know, I think education is huge. I think the problem is, you know, kids are invincible, at least in their mind, and I was. And I don't think anybody telling me anything would have changed what I did. I think, though, you know, I don't know why. I guess I already had some aspirations for something cognitively, and when I started getting a head injury, even my doctor said, you're going to be like Muhammad Ali if you keep doing this anymore, and that's when I hung it up. And I think it's, you know, in every way we got to keep safe, you know, ways for people to keep doing what they love, but to be safe about it, make wise choices.
Right. Now, is there as far as, like we talked about before, diet and all that kind of stuff, is there anything that people can do to really avoid these type of injuries other than with diet and exercise and all that kind of thing?
Just education of yourself, education of the coaches and the parents. And again, I would really push everyone to implement something at your school, at schools that are able to screen people before it's, you know, before they're down a trail they can't get off. You know, I mean, it's one of the things that on my show healthradio.net, the show is called Living with and Beyond Disability. And next week, actually, I just talked to Maria and got this book. So talking to a guy that was actually the author of the bill of the concussion law for schools in Colorado. And he's a neuropsychologist. He's had patients with second impact syndrome. Very smart guy. And he's going to be, his name's Dr. Mike Memley. And I'll be interviewing him about all these topics in detail, you know, about the testing and what we should do. And so, you know, it's going to be great information. So that information is going to be key. We're going to talk about those tests too.
All right. Now, as far as somebody who has been injured, they have some type of brain injury from either a sport or whatever the situation may be, what kind of symptoms should they be looking for, and what is the best course of action for somebody with an injury to take to treat it?
Yeah, that's a great question, because there's something that is referred to as post-concussive syndrome. And really with that, there's a constellation of symptoms. You don't have to have all of them. You can have one of them, or you can have a mix of them. But it's such as things such as headaches or blurred vision or irritability. That's one of the ones that just kind of people pick up on, or actually the family members pick up with that, but the person who suffered it usually doesn't. And it's like, you know, I got a short fuse. And when you sit down and ask the patient, saying, you know, when I'm sitting there talking to them about all these symptoms, you know, headache, dizziness, balance problems, irritability. Is everyone just irritating you easier? And they're like, yeah. You know, and so that's one of the first things that the family members notice, or they complain. That's why they seek help usually. They don't really seek help for the headaches. They don't seek help for the balance or nausea or just kind of anything like that. But it's the irritability. And why does irritability sometimes happen is that if you think about after a head injury, a lot of times the way I describe it is we lose some of the filters. So the patient loses some of those filters, meaning you are able to sit off in a room. So without a head injury and normal, you're able to sit in a room with a TV on, your kids are talking, the dog's barking, you know, got maybe even the radio on, and you're reading a book. You know,
your brain is wanting to process so much at a time.
Your brain can focus on what you want to do and screen everything out.
Sorry, it's our 90-second warning. Go ahead.
Okay, so anyways, I just, you lose that ability. And so all this stuff comes in at one time, you get over, you get really irritable. And there's medications that can be used. You need to seek medical attention for that, because there's somebody who knows post-concussion syndrome, there's different kind of medications that can be used to really dampen that.
All right. Well, we're getting towards the end of the show here. Is there anybody that you want to give a shout-out to? Anything you want to plug?
Yeah, just, again, healthradio.net. Go to the on-demand, pull down Dr. House. You can listen to the show. We have great topics like we're talking about now. But we have a podcast that's live every Tuesday at 2 Eastern to 3 Eastern, and podcast there for other listening too. So welcome you to that.
All right, great. Well, it was awesome talking to you. It was good to get that insight, and I hope people out there in the combat sports listening can take heed of your advice about what to do when you have an injury and what to look out for and all that. And we'll get a link over to you on the show so that you can come back and reference it at any time. Thanks a lot.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much, Doctor. Pleasure talking to you.
Have a good one. Till next week, folks. We're out.